Utah's 3rd Congressional District GOP candidate, J.R. Byrd, will be on the June 25th primary ballot in the seat now being occupied by John Curtis. Byrd, a successful local business owner, farmer, and Roosevelt City mayor, is heavily invested in this campaign to become Uinta Basin's U.S. Congressional Representative. Out of the 10 candidates running for this office, J.R. Byrd finished 3rd out of convention last Saturday behind Utah Senator Mike Kennedy and Utah Young Republicans Chairman Zach Wilson, who as a convention-only candidate was eliminated from the race. Through extensive effort from J.R.'s wife and other volunteers, J.R. Byrd is qualified for the primary ballot after gathering 7,000 signatures. Good afternoon. I'm Steve Evans with News Talk 104.5 FM, KVEL. Joining us in studio this evening is J.R. Byrd. J.R., it's good to have you in studio with us again.
Thanks, Steve. It's good to be with you again.
it's always fun visiting with you. I enjoy our conversations both on air and off air. But before we jump into the questions that I have outlined, let's talk about your wife, Brindy, for just a minute. What a great lady. She's just spectacular. Has she always been this way?
She's amazing. You know what? I won the lottery with Brindy. I totally won the lottery there. She's been super supportive through this whole process. You know, when you mentioned signature gathering, you know, that is frowned upon, obviously, by a lot of delegates, and I understand why. But we decided to go a dual path when I first signed up. And as we did that, I wanted to make sure that we took the best route possible when it came to signature gathering. We didn't pay a professional firm to do that. Brindy was the number one signature gatherer on our team. She really did a great job. And I think you've probably seen her around at some of the events.
I have. The Home and Garden Show, she was out meeting people and talking. And I mean, that's what campaigning is really all about. And like you mentioned, she was doing it and other volunteers were doing this work. It wasn't paid out to be done. And I think that's really a credit to you and your wife, Brindy, and the effort that you're putting into your campaign.
Sure. We wanted to do it the best way possible. And like I said, she came out and really did a great job. We had a lot of volunteers helping us along the way. And, you know, we did pay a few college students to assist us as well.
And they needed the work, right?
They needed the work for college tuition and for some of their loans that they had. I think that's the right way to pay for a college student loan, by the way.
opposed Biden's student loan debt forgiveness bailout right before the election?
Exactly what I'm talking about. This is... you know, it's unconstitutional what he's trying to do. You know, it is difficult to be put in that situation. Obviously, these people that are going to college and school, they're young and they're, you know, financially, they're not well off. And this is a difficulty for them. But for Biden to go out and do that right before an election is completely wrong, in my opinion.
Yeah, there's a lot of things wrong with that. Have we ever had a congressional representative from the Uinta Basin?
I've heard not for over 100 years. We have not. And so
over 100 years ago, we did have?
It sounds like it, yeah.
Okay.
From what I understand.
You don't remember, because you weren't here. Neither one of us were.
That's what I've heard through the grapevine, is a little over 100 years. We did have somebody. Actually, I did see a picture out on the wall. And I can't remember the name, but we did have a representative, but it has been over 100 years. And so super
100
excited.
Years, it must have been a black and white, you know, maybe with the hands kind of covered up.
Definitely.
Why is it important to have a congressional representative from the Uinta Basin, someone from the Uinta Basin representing our interests in this district in the U.S. Senate, U.S. Congress, I'm sorry?
You know, not only for the Uinta Basin, but for the whole eastern side of Utah. You look at the diversity of issues that we face that other parts of Utah don't have to deal with. You look at the public lands issues that we have here that really affect water, that affect energy production, that affect a lot of aspects of our life that are controlled at the federal level. To not have that representation puts us really at a disadvantage in our district. And so to have somebody that understands those issues, the public lands issues, water, energy, you know, those things that we live with on a daily basis is something that we definitely need at the federal level. And those are federal issues.
Do you feel there's a disconnect in Congress today with the average citizen in the United States? Is there a disconnect?
Absolutely. The more urban we become, in states and cities, the more disconnected I believe we become from where our food sources come from, where our water sources come from, where our electricity comes from, where our energy comes from. And that is a major disconnect. And I think a lot of the people that represent us in Washington that have never been in those situations and lived in that environment, they just don't understand the connection there. They're completely disconnected from that. And so the decisions being made at the federal level that affect us directly are being made without a lot of that experience and understanding. And I think that that's to our detriment.
In the state of Utah, rural Utah's representation, now we're very fortunate to have a representative in the state house here and also Senator Winterton representing our interests. However, as the Wasatch Front continues to grow, rural Utah's influence is shrinking. Is the same thing happening in U.S. Congress?
I believe it is, yes. And if you looked at the makeup of our district, if you look at the geographical layout, geographically, the majority of our district is rural. But if you look at population-wise, there are two counties that make up the vast majority of the population in our district. And so there is an
imbalance.
Where
are those two counties?
Utah and Salt Lake County.
Okay.
Yep. So they're the largest counties in our district, make up the largest population. Although geographically, they're probably 10% of the overall makeup of our district.
How is your campaign being received? How are you being received in Salt Lake and Utah counties?
Very well, actually. And in fact, made a lot of good friends out there, made a lot of good inroads out there. And the people that I've talked with in those areas, they get it and they understand. And they're excited also for a rural candidate, somebody that understands some of those more intricate details of our district, being able to represent them. Obviously, there's differences of needs and differences of needs. So if you look at what they're facing in the Wasatch Front, they're facing growth, obviously, almost opposite of what we're facing in rural Utah. They're experiencing mass amounts of growth. So they're wondering where to put all these people. Infrastructure is a big deal. Housing is a big deal. Traffic is a big issue for them. And so, you know, that's something that I've learned and been able to understand with visiting with them. But then we almost have the opposite dynamic in rural Utah, where our economies are dwindling. And our infrastructure and those types of things is not a big of an issue. If we could take what's happening on the Wasatch Front and start to spread that and push that to the rural areas to help build those, you know, infrastructure out to the rural areas to incentivize growth and economic growth in those areas, I think there's some synergy there that we could capitalize on, and really something that I want to look more into, you know, further I get in this.
J.R. Byrd, with the investment that has been made, I'm sorry, not investment, with the debt that's been incurred by our Congress, trillions of dollars, and some of that going to infrastructure, mainly green energy projects. Right. Is rural America getting the investment in infrastructure that it needs? Does rural Utah, by rural Utah, I'm not talking about St. George and Cache County. I'm talking about out here in places like Sevier County and Wayne County and the Uinta Basin and Carbon and Emery counties. Are we getting the infrastructure investment that we deserve? Are we getting our fair share?
That's a great question, and I think to some degree, I think we are. If you look at the fiber optics, and the grants that are coming for telecommunications and things like that to our area, I think we're getting a good portion of that. If you look at rural hospitals and things, I've looked through the budget, the federal budget, and seen where those appropriations are made, and I think we're getting our fair share. And it does come down to leadership in our counties, leadership in our cities, and leadership in our districts to make sure that we're receiving the funding that we're entitled to or that's available to us. And so as Mayor of Roosevelt and as staff and a team, we've been able to pull in you know, significant amounts of grants and loans to our area to benefit our residents. And so those things become available. We need to make sure that we're taking advantage of them. If not, they're going to other states and other areas. And so my feeling is, if our taxpayer dollars are going to the federal government, this is not federal money. This is our money, right? And we need to make sure that we're in the process of getting as much of that back for our area as possible. And that means for rural area in rural Utah. And that's something that I plan to do as the next representative.
As our congressman, you feel that you can be in a position to garner more of those resources to rural communities like the Uinta Basin?
I believe so, yes.
Okay.
And our district as a whole. There's some infrastructure projects that need to be done on the Wasatch Front as well. And we need to make sure that those are being taken care of. Transportation.
Well,
projects.
I would think that with the majority of the representatives they have in the Utah legislature, that their needs are going to be met.
They definitely are. And we need to make sure that our needs are being met.
Correct.
In rural Utah.
Convention takeaways. Utah Republican GOP state convention was just held. What are your takeaways from the convention?
It was wild and crazy. That was the first time that I had been there as a candidate, obviously. It was a learning experience, definitely a learning curve. We went 6 rounds. Looking back, I don't know if I would have went that many rounds, but it was an interesting experience.
There's a lot of people running for Congress right now. I mean, there's 10 candidates.
Yeah, just in CD3, there were 10 candidates. 10 or 9 or 10. But so we went several rounds and several votes, Senate candidates as well. I think there were 7 in that race. And so you had a lot of rounds of voting.
Each round, everyone had to speak, right?
Correct. And we got up to a minute to speak after every round. And, at the moment, I was taking advantage of that opportunity, obviously trying to get the message out there to people. And for the most part, I felt we were very well received. I know it drug it on a little bit, but we were very well received and did quite well in convention, considering that we were a dual path candidate.
The convention received some bad press. Delegates booed Governor Cox. From your perspective, what were the delegates' primary contention with our incumbent governor?
I think some of the decisions that the governor made when he was first in office concerning transgender bills and certain things, when he vetoed that bill, some of the other stances that he's taken towards some of those social issues has not been well received by the delegates. And I think that's been what has hurt him with the delegates. If you look at a lot of the more rural areas, obviously in the second round when he got up to speak, somebody from rural Utah spoke for him. And I think he's well liked throughout a lot of the rural areas because of the things that he's implemented for rural Utah and actually spreading, a lot of the job opportunities throughout the state to rural Utah. So he's been fairly well received that way. But I do feel that there are some decisions that he made initially and early on in his tenure as the governor that have really people have not forgiven him for.
If you're just joining us, we're visiting with J.R. Byrd. He is the congressional candidate for Utah's congressional 3rd district. Moving forward, J.R. Byrd, toward the primary, what are your feelings about winning the nomination?
Actually, pretty good. We're in a very good position. We were pleased with the way we performed. I was pleased with the way I performed in convention. Being 3rd and coming from nowhere, I think was good. We were in 2nd place for the first 3 votes. And then we had a couple candidates that endorsed and another candidate that as has been mentioned. But, financially, we're set for the primary. We've got ads going out. We have billboards going out. We're holding town halls and we're continuing to work and get the name recognition out there, but also the message out there of why I'm running. That's what's most important to me, is that people understand who I am, what I will do, and what I'm capable of if elected and when elected. And that's why I want them to elect me. And if they don't agree with some of those things, then we have plenty of choices, which is great. But I do feel that the message that we're sharing is really resonating with a lot of the people in Utah.
What are, J.R. Byrd, what are some of the biggest issues concerning citizens in your district? Have you been out campaigning?
Well, public lands is a major issue, and we know that. And the reason why is 67% or more of Utah is public lands and controlled by the federal government. If you look at our district, that means that the federal government controls our ability to utilize those lands for mining, for drilling, for recreating, for grazing, all the things that we need those lands for and that are economic benefit for us are controlled by the federal government. That's a major issue. Water is a major issue, not only in rural Utah, but on the Wasatch Front, especially with the Great Salt Lake evaporating like it is and drying up like it is. That's a major concern. And then you look at infrastructure. That's also a major concern, and traffic. Those are the things locally that are pressing on the minds of our residents.
In 2025, honing this in more locally, the BLM will be updating their Dinosaur North plan, which could potentially close 208 miles of OHV trails in Uinta County. OHV it's a big recreation. It's becoming a business here to help diversify our economic base. Under the Biden administration, the BLM recently closed 317 miles of OHV trails in Grant County. Now, similar actions this year are being taken in Emory, San Juan, Sevier counties. They also have their site on the Book Cliffs area, Nine Mile Canyon in Duchesne County. As our congressional representative, what would you do to better protect our access to our public lands?
Well, we have to fight back against a lot of these things. And, you know, SUA has really taken over and ruled a lot of the decision-making of our public lands, especially in southern Utah, and it's working its way up north. And I knew that this was going to happen and was a concern. And trying to get the rest of the state and federal delegation on board with this and understanding this is a big deal. So we've got to get, build a coalition with our federal delegation, our state delegation, make sure that they're very well aware and start fighting this battle. We already have a congressman in Congress right now. That's Representative Curtis, who is currently fighting this and battling this, I believe, through the West Act.
Okay, let's talk about the West Act. The House last week passed the West Act, which would direct the Bureau of Land Management to withdraw its public lands rule that was recently finalized. What is the BLM rule, and how would that affect public land use in Utah and other Western states?
Yeah, so basically the BLM rule, it's another one of those three-letter agencies, right, that make policy without going through congressional act. And so for them to be able to implement rules and policies on our public lands without congressional means that these trail systems can be shut down without really any representation. It's already been done. You already mentioned it in Grand County, 317-plus miles of trails shut down. This West Act would force BLM to go through Congress to be able to get this done, and obviously that's what needs to happen. There's a Rains Act that's also being proposed and has been moving slowly through Congress that I would be supportive of, that would rein in the bureaucracies as well. You mentioned a lot of these things that affect our area, recreation, affects tourism and those types of things. And so as part of the Rains Act, anything that affects the economy of in the amount of more than $100 million would have to be, looked at through Congress or be passed through Congress before that became regulation or a law. And so there's a couple of things that we can do, this West Act, the Rains Act, to rein these bureaucracies in. But we need to come together again as Utahns and make sure that we're fighting this battle on all fronts.
Weaponization of federal agencies. You mentioned the BLM. There's also the IRS with 80,000 new IRS employees that have just recently been hired under the Biden administration. The Department of Justice, the EPA, the FBI. We can name others. In your mind, are these agencies being used by the Biden administration to harm or punish opponents?
Absolutely. We've seen that happen. We're seeing that happen. We've seen that happen since Trump was elected office the first time in 2016. Immediately, an investigation ensued on, the Ukraine. Well, it was the Russian collusion story, and then the Mueller report, and then all of these things.
Did any of that stuff
It never panned out.
Never panned out.
And this is the frustrating thing. And so when you cry wolf, at what point are you telling the truth? And at what point is it just another ploy to destroy an opponent? And I think this is what's being done. And it's really the most devastating thing to me is the doubt that it's instilled in the minds of the public. That we can't trust those agencies. We don't have the confidence in those agencies or in government that we should. And we've got to stop this type of behavior.
Is there a two-tiered justice system?
It appears so. It appears so. And it's being, again, weaponized for personal...
Well, let's look at the railroad. You went a railroad for an example. We've met every single requirement. Every single millions and millions of dollars have been invested in that project, and we received all the permitting that needed to be done for the project, and then it was all overturned by three liberal judges, and Trump. Right now, Trump is being he's not on the campaign trail right now because he's dealing with a frivolous lawsuit.
Right.
And he can't leave the court.
Exactly. And this is how, I mean, this is a major problem. And this is how politics...
The timing on that, is that coincidence or is that by design?
By design. And it's the way the politics are being played nowadays. And I've said this on the campaign trail as well. You know, anymore, politicians don't let a good crisis go, you know, they don't, without being capitalizing on that. And what they do and what's been happening is we're using these very extreme political views to create crises, to fundraise, to get reelected, or to destroy an opponent. And this is what's happening. And it, again, what I want to do getting in there is we've got to reestablish trust. We've got to add transparency to everything that we're doing. We need to make sure that the public understands what's happening. We've got to roll back these and rein back these agencies that are destroying our country. And we've got to make sure that we're not focused on these fringe things that are meant to divide and incite emotion in the public and really start looking at the big issues and the issues that we have common ground in and start moving forward. You mentioned already $34.7 trillion in debt. That's what we should be focusing on, not whether or not Trump had an affair. At this point, because our country is going down the tubes, and it's going down the tubes fast.
The federal deficit, you talked about $34 million in debt today. Do you remember?
Trillion.
$19 trillion.
Yeah.
You remember in trillion with a T. you remember the beginning of 1990.
Right.
You remember that.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. Bill Clinton was the president.
Right. Yeah. We were just $4 trillion in debt. What poses more of a threat to future generations, climate change or the growing deficit?
Obviously, the growing deficit. And you know, climate change, I'm you know, and looking at the environment and being good stewards of the environment is something that we all want. So I'm not disregarding that. But obviously, our debt is going to destroy our country.
I had a young college student try to convince me that that federal debt, government debt, wasn't the same as personal debt.
Well, let me just tell you this.
And so therefore we need to spend more money that we don't have to protect the environment.
So do you know
her argument?
Do you know who holds the majority of the debt at the national level?
China.
Nope.
Oh.
China owns foreign countries.
I shouldn't have guessed. I was a guess.
Well, I've researched. I've done a lot of research when it comes to the budget and debt and everything else. $8 trillion is held by other countries. Almost $1 trillion of that is held by China. The rest of it is held by us as Americans. That means my children and your children will inherit over $260,000 each in debt.
How many kids do you have?
I have four kids. That's over $1 million that they will inherit when they become a taxpayer in debt. Does that sound like liberty and freedom to you?
Of course not. No. In the few minutes that we have remaining, I want to touch on the border crisis. You know, I've tried to understand or get my mind behind the motive of open borders and why the Biden administration is pushing this so hard. And the only thing I can come up with is seats in the U.S. Congress are determined by population, right?
Right.
How would 7.9 million illegal aliens flooding cities like Chicago, L.A., liberal cities, New York, affect the census? And what would the effect, that effect, have on future congressional seats and Congress in general?
Yeah. Well, there's only 435 seats. And that,
so they're going to move them from other areas.
That's right. Based on population.
To more liberal cities.
Correct. And if you think about it, that's the number that you mentioned is twice the population of Utah.
So it's power and control.
Exactly. And then you look at what the Biden administration is trying to do to register those that are coming across illegally or through this quasi, parole provision that they're utilizing to get them registered so that they can vote. So there's, I think it's a two-prong approach.
Get them registered to vote, get them dependent on the federal dole. And
absolutely.
Also let's move around some congressional seats to more favor the liberal politicians,
that's
the
right.
Democratic Party. And to heck with the fentanyl that's coming over the border.
And the human trafficking and everything else that's devastating a lot of our citizens here in America. You know, it's really interesting. I saw an article that showed a poster that said, hey, when you get to the Americas, when you get to America, vote for Biden. So there's this propaganda that's already going on.
I see lots of Biden t-shirts as well.
Right. So it is frustrating to watch. And you know, it's at the detriment. We're the ones paying the price for that. The states are paying the price for that. Local governments are paying the price for that because we are the ones dealing with that issue. We have all become border states.
We're out of time. It's gone by awfully quick. J.R. Byrd, congressional candidate for Utah's
congressional district 3.
Any final comments?
You know, I just appreciate the opportunity to be here. You know, I'm really excited about the campaign and what we're accomplishing, the momentum that we're building going into the primary. We really do have a great shot at this. Would ask for, you know, not only the support from rural Utah, but urban Utah. We really do need a candidate that understands the issues for our district. And grateful for this opportunity to run and would ask for your support and vote.
All right. Thank you for joining us. This is J.R. Byrd, and we appreciate you taking the time to come in and visit with us, J.R. I'm Steve Evans on News Talk 104.5 FM and AM 920 KVEL. Thanks for joining us.